Hello everyone, Mark here with a teaser of what's happening over on Patreon. Every month a new bonus episode is released on Patreon for members to show my appreciation of the support they're extending to the show. These bonus episodes have allowed me to head back through the series episodes, where I take topics that were covered briefly and then explore them in a little more detail. These bonus episodes haven't taken anything away from my initial vision of the series, but have allowed me to supplement it with topics in isolation. This teaser is designed to give you an idea of the topics we cover and if these bonus episodes would be of interest to yourself. The teaser for the latest release will remain on the normal feed for a month, and then replace with a teaser of the next bonus episode to come out. If you are interested in supporting the series, please consider heading over to the Casting Through Ancient Greece Patreon page, where you can get access to these bonus episodes, plus other benefits. Hello everyone, and welcome back to another bonus episode here on Patreon, where this time we'll be exploring the defense at Artemisium. We've now looked at some of the motivations for Xerxes to launch his invasion of 480 BC into Greece. This saw us compare it to the invasions ordered by his father, Darius, 10 years earlier, with it seeming different motivations were driving the two invasions. Darius appears to be ordering the invasion into Greek lands as an extension of the counterattack during the Ionian Revolt. The locations targeted during this expedition had played some role during the Ionians' revolt in 498, while the number sent by the Persians does not appear to indicate a motivation of complete control of Greek lands. However, Xerxes would arrange an invasion most probably 10 times the size as his father's, based off modern estimates. We saw different elements that may have motivated him to relaunch a new attempt into Greece. Herodotus points out those within the court during his father's rule were advising for action, though Herodotus frames this in a story with the notion of the evil advisor as a theme. We also spoke about the tradition under each king of expanding the empire. While the Persians were also well known for treating those who subjugated and behaved very well, while those who defied them, they were ruthless against and would not stop until punishment had been dished out. Nevertheless, Xerxes would launch his invasion that would see the largest force yet sent west against Greece, while this would also see some of the most impressive engineering works to support the march. We then turn to how the Greeks would respond to this, the largest invasion yet seen by them. We explore the political makeup of the Greek city-states and how it was not as conducive to organisation and cooperation as an empire, a united country. These Greek cities were fiercely independent and had long histories of wars between one another. However, we looked at the idea that cooperation, even in this environment, could be arranged, when all those involved saw a much larger threat coming from outside. Though even with this cooperation that would take place, only 31 city-states would come together to form the Hellenic League. Many would come to Medes or submit to the Persians, but the vast majority of the over 1,000 city-states would remain neutral. Though what mattered was the fact that within the Hellenic League would be the two most powerful Greek polis, Athens and Sparta. We would find the League meeting a number of times when they would swear the oaths and make arrangements for the defence of Greece. They would, in the lead up to the invasion, look to recruit more allies, gain information on the Persian forces, and look to how best defend their lands. After the aborted attempt at making a stand at the Tempe Pass, right on the northern edges of Greek lands, a more organised plan would follow. This would see the Hellenic League send an army to the Pass of Thermopylae and a fleet to Artemisium, both situated on the east coast of Greece. It's both of these locations, the reason for their selection, and what would take place there we'll now be turning to for our next few episodes. For this episode, we'll be placing the majority of our focus on Artemisium, but also looking at its context in the larger picture. To the east of the Attic coast is the large island of Euboea that runs the length of the Greek coastline along Attica, Boeotia, Phocis, and to where its northern end sits across the strait from Thessalian territory. It's on this northern end of Euboea that the Cape of Artemisium is located, with the Greek mainland just across the narrow body of water. The strait runs all the way down between the mainland east coast and the western coast of Euboea, to where it then opens out into the sea on the approach to the southern Attic coast. What is also important to note is that the other site we'll be talking about next episode, Thermopylae, was located about 40 miles along this strait, on the coast within the territory of Phocis. So we are now going to turn to the question of why this cape on the northern end of Euboea was chosen to mount the Greeks' defensive stance on water against Xerxes' fleet. Since we just covered Artemisium's location and the feature of a strait following the coastline beyond it, let's begin there. With Artemisium situated inside the Straits of Euboea, this would see that the vast fleet of the Persians would be contained to a narrow area. As seen with a number of events through the Second Persian invasion, the idea of a narrow battlefield was favoured by the Greeks. This was due to the fact that they would be outnumbered at all their engagements. So by meeting their enemy on a narrow frontage, they would see that they would not have to face the entire Persian force at once. This would be the case at Artemisium, where only part of the Persian fleet would be able to challenge the Greeks at a time. The narrow straits would also see that greater numbers could prove to be a hindrance. With such a large fleet, a portion could be deployed to engage the Greeks, but the rest of the fleet would be in the rear areas waiting to come forward. Once the confusion of battle began, these additional lines of ships in the rear could then find themselves having to contend with the wrecks of those deployed before them, while retreating vessels could also prove to be a great hazard, preventing an effective advance of the rear lines, or even taking them out of the fight before they met the enemy, with them being fouled on the retreating ships. Well, I hope you enjoyed that taste of what's happening over on Patreon. If you would like to support the series, please consider heading over to Patreon, where you can gain access to the full version of this episode, plus many more. Alternatively, you can head to the Casting Through Ancient Greece website and click on the Support the Series button, where you can discover many ways to extend your support to the show. Thank you everyone for listening to the series, and I hope you continue to enjoy what is to come in the future.